Jenna, I'm very touched that you came to be with us this evening.
Yeah. Thank you for coming.
I imagine you had other things you could do with your evenings.
On a Saturday night when you're on vacation. Right?
Thanks for joining us. So I'll say a couple of things just by way of a little further introduction. I'm not sure how we're going to go forward with it, but it does seem that this is important to make available to people, not only because it feels good to us to do this, to be able to do this, but also, as Linda was saying at the end of her introduction, because of what's happening in the world. So tonight, there's a series of several different kind of themes that we'll get into each evening we do this. And presumably a book of some kind will hopefully come out of it. But tonight what I wanted to do is to go through some items I put on the flip chart here on tonight's menu. Why deeper heart connection is becoming urgent and inevitable. And one simple answer is because traditional sources of spiritual security are vanishing, forcing us to find new and or deeper, truer, realer ones. Now, it's really interesting to have such a, I don't know when the last time was we, how old are you, Jenna?
15.
So I don't know when it was, when I think it was probably quite a while ago that we had someone your age sitting in to one of these sessions. So you were born, that would have been 1993? So we were already well into the computer age, and the internet age was really getting underway right around that time. And of course, you know, the stuff that we talk about from our old days is, it's past ancient history to you. But I think what I'm going to be doing this evening is kind of laying some groundwork that those of us who are a little older in some ways are more familiar with, and in other ways, however, haven't really. The changes that are happening in the world now are so profound and so rapid, and they're accelerating so quickly that it's as if we can't catch up. So heart gazing is something that feels to us that it might be a helpful part of the catch-up process or the adjustment process in the face of these changes. So what I put together for tonight's presentation on why deeper heart connection is becoming not only urgent but inevitable, and that's two very different things. Urgent is like, well, it's really got to happen. But inevitable means that barring really horrific catastrophes, I mean, Linda and I saw a movie last night where the entire world was wiped out by a virus, you know, so barring that kind of changes, if we humans have the chance to keep going, then your generation and the generations a little older than you are able to help clean up what our generation and ones preceding us have left behind, along with hopefully using whatever we've brought forward that's helpful. What we want to do then is address five what I call meta shifts that have changed the world of sacred trust beyond recognition. And that's another way of describing spiritual security. Sacred trust is being able to trust and have faith in certain parts of life, things, people, teachings, traditions, that become the ground and foundation of your life. And so these meta shifts that I'm talking about, meta means greater than the immediate, obvious, local ones. Meta shifts are shifts that you find pretty much everywhere you look, but you won't necessarily notice them as such unless you kind of step back from the details. So these are the five meta shifts. I'll go through them fairly quickly, and then we can talk about them a little bit. Meta shift number one, information overload and anxiety overwhelm have made belief insufficient for faith. So especially just about during Jenner's lifetime, as it happens, there's been this explosion of information.
Yeah.
Everybody is overloaded by information, often feels overwhelmed by it. Mm-hmm. It's more than we know how to deal with. And it didn't used to be that way mm-hmm. at all. I mean, when did cell phones come in?
About 15 years ago.
About 15 years
ago. Before really, that, there were bigger ones.
There were bigger ones, yeah. But they really became part of everybody's lives in the last 10, 12, mm-hmm. 15 years at the outside. Email, of course, is huge that way. But also on TV, the internet, everywhere we look, there's just this bombardment with bits of information that humans have actually never had to deal with like this before. Right. It's been different. It's not. That's not to say that people haven't been in situations where there's been way too much going on. Anybody living in a city since ancient times has had a lot of information to deal with mm-hmm. all the time. But the degree of it that's become chronic, the extent to which it's become chronic, is at this stage unprecedented. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of science that backs that up, and it's pretty obvious to everybody. But as I thought about this, I realized it's not just information overload. If that was all it was, it would be relatively easier to deal with. There's also an overwhelming increase in anxiety that has to do with the fact that for most people, the basics of life have become far less certain than they were before. Everything is changing so rapidly in so many cultures all over the world. The kind of ancient traditions of the culture no longer hold. I mean, everywhere you look, I remember when I was living in Fiji in 89 mostly. And I was on an island as part of a spiritual community. I was on an island way out in the land part of the world. We'd call it the boondocks, but it was the island, the boondock islands, way out there where very few Europeans or Americans went. And the people living on the island, although they were there as part of the service staff to mostly Americans and people from Europe and Australia who were part of the spiritual community, they had their own village. And they were clearly very traditional people. It was extremely intriguing to me to watch how their village life revolved around the one TV that they had in the central hut, or bure it's called, with the one VCR, and they had mostly American-made movies shipped in from the capital of the country, and everybody every week was taking in those movies. Well, that kind of influence, you know, way far away like that, it changes. In that kind of traditional culture, they would hardly ever have contact at all with anything other than their own culture. And this is the way it's been all over the world. Well, part of what this has done to us is that it's made it so that the clashing together of all this information and the sources of all this anxiety have made it so that the old belief systems no longer suffice for people. Even if people do deeply believe in whoever their God person or God concept may be, It's very hard to sustain a simple faith any longer, the way people used to be able to do when they weren't right up against all these other cultures and exposed to it all on the internet. So that's meta shift number one. Meta shift number two, you can't trust anybody anymore, no matter what their experience, credentials, or tradition. There's a level of this that's prompted by the news of the latest scandal. And everybody who's famous being caught in lies and trickery of one kind or another, or failing to live up to their responsibility. So there's a level of it that comes through the information explosion, including information about the authorities and figureheads who we used to be able to have more or less unquestioning trust in. There's another level of it that's deeper than that, and I think it comes from meta shift number one, and that is that it's pretty obvious that nobody has a handle on what's happening anymore. So these authorities, even if they have a lot of personal integrity and you feel like you can generally trust them, spend any time around them, it becomes pretty obvious that you probably know something they don't. It would be good if they did know it, and because they don't know it, you have to take what they say, what they represent, with a grain of salt. Whether it's a spiritual teacher or a president or a homeroom teacher or mom, whoever it may be, the fact that nobody can be trusted to hold the whole picture, and that in general there's a kind of a wariness that we've all found it's necessary to proceed with, that's more so than it used to be in the traditional kind of way that people grew up, even as recently as the last few decades of the 20th century, which now seems like ancient times. Meta shift number three. The old ways don't work in the new world. So, quote, spiritual, not religious, unquote, people have to find their own authentic paths. Now, maybe this should be said a little less categorically. Maybe the way to say it, the old ways don't necessarily work in the new world, or don't work for everybody in the new world, or don't work all by themselves in the new world. There's a lot in the old paths that many people continue to find very, very helpful, spiritual paths and other paths and traditions of living. But more and more, part of what's changing about this is that the way it used to be, where you grew up, you would hardly ever be exposed to anybody who even had different beliefs. Right. Or if you were, the walls between the two cultures were generally so strong that you never really got to understand much about where they were coming from, and nobody was expected to. In fact, the expectation was you're going to stay with your own kind, you're going to be true to your own people. I'm thinking of that song from West Side Story, stick to your own kind, you know? But in the new world, where all the information has just sort of, it's like an atomic, not just a fission explosion, but also a fusion where it's all come together and it's more and more available to everybody, especially on the net. In the new world, all of the different types of information that have come in make it impossible to naively believe in the old presentations of things. So, for instance, nowadays, nearly all otherwise intelligent people who have a belief in the religions that have come through in more ancient times, whether it's Judaism, Christianity, Islam, from that part of the world, the Middle East, or the more Oriental traditions or the more indigenous traditions, everybody is kind of sifting through the material they've received, and they set aside the parts of it that just don't make sense. Mm-hmm. You know, I can believe in Jesus and God without having to believe that the world was created 6,000 years ago. I'm sorry. That's obviously ridiculous to me, but I can still have my fundamental faith. Well, that kind of thinking right there is meta shift number three. And what it's produced is many people who are, I mean, this is literally, there's a book, a couple of books, or one literally by this title, Spiritual, Not Religious. And there's a lot of sociological and psychological studies that are taking note of the fact that so many people today literally characterize themselves by that term, or they would say, I'm spiritual, but I don't belong to any sect. I don't believe in any particular traditional religion in that sense. And that's the meaning of it, that they have an essential personal faith and spirituality, a spirituality meaning a living connection to the divine, to the greater reality, the higher power, God, whatever they call it or don't call it. But it's not coming through any particular church or synagogue or tradition. Or they may, and in many cases this is much very prevalent, they may have a kind of core faith or tradition that they're associated with. And this is certainly true of a lot of spiritual seekers and meditators. They can have a core faith that they're primarily identified with. Like they would say, well, I'm a Buddhist. But I go to visit all kinds of different teachers. I get different practices from here and there. And that, to me, is not... it's completely consistent with my integrity and my authenticity. I've found my own authentic path. And if a teacher from my kind of root tradition tells me that's a mistake, it's pretty much a sign to me that that teacher's not for me, because I don't believe that. And I can't be that narrow-minded anymore. So that then leads to meta shift number four, which takes all of this in a very specific direction. And it's actually part of why these other shifts are so significant to us. In other words, they're not happening randomly just because technology has made the world smaller and we're now living in a global village or like a global mind with the internet. But there's another much more, in some ways, primary or primal meta shift, which is the ancient split between spirit and matter is no longer tolerable. And so many of the old ways have been built on that split and have perpetuated it one way or another. They give you the impression that spirit is good and flesh is bad. Spirit is strong and flesh is weak. God matters and you don't, or not as much as God. Being full of faith and pure and in that sense holy is the way to be. And if you're too much into material desires or passions or wants and needs, then you must not be religious or spiritual enough. This has become a very, very prominent kind of line of questioning that's going on in more and more people, more and more societies all over the world. And what it means is the ancient split between spirit and matter is no longer tolerable. So we have to heal that split. We have to heal it in ourselves and our world. And the old ways are more and more being discovered not to have the means to make that possible. Mm-hmm. In some ways, they're tending to perpetuate the split, mm-hmm. even while many of their most talented and forward-thinking and inspired people are moving beyond it. And this is a major crisis and a meta shift that's underway. There's many, many people who are leading edge spiritual teachers and scientists, artists, philosophers who in one way or another, are reaching this conclusion and helping to facilitate this meta shift all over the world. I mean, here's one good example. In India, there's a publisher in India who's been, he and I have been trying to figure out a book that he could publish of ours for about a couple of years. And he specializes in making books for Indian people who don't want Indian spirituality from their parents' gurus. They only want it from Westerners who have taken those teachings and adapted the teachings and healed some of that split, because these Indian people today are middle class, they have jobs in the computer industry and so on, and they don't believe a lot of the old story, including that intense split. So meta shift number five, the final one, is that not only is this uniting of spirit and matter happening in our own bodies and our world, but also, meta shift number five, spiritual evolution is being democratized. The old ways have included regarding spiritual teachers and religious leaders as somehow kind of ultimate superiors, or the necessary mediators, the providers of the wisdom. And more, that's just not so. In the old days, you had to go to such a teacher. If you were such a teacher, Jenner, and there wasn't any such thing as TV, books, the internet, anything like that, I'd actually have to go to you and persuade you that I was a candidate worthy of receiving your wisdom. And having worked really hard to get your wisdom, you probably would want to make sure that I was authentic, that I was worth spending time on. Well, that's all, for the most part, changed. You can find out just about anything you want to on the internet. Yeah, I mean, you don't even have to get it from a bookstore and books anymore. Mm-hmm. So spiritual evolution is being democratized. And part of what that's shifting is that it requires whole new levels of integrity, accountability, and empowering generosity of the providers, not the receivers. I mean, in the situation I was just describing, imagining that you were a teacher, Jenner, and I was coming to you, you would be testing me to make sure that I had integrity, accountability, and was coming with a generosity of being willing to go through whatever you would require of me. And while that's not out of the picture, more and more of the providers are being called to task and required to demonstrate and to be transparent with their integrity and accountability, and to show that they're oriented to give freely in this time, because it's all being democratized. So I think that's the basic kind of a way of reading the changes going on in the world that make deeper heart connection both more urgent and, I would say, again, barring cataclysms and disasters, makes it inevitable. It's as if the human spirit itself is driving toward much deeper connectivity, person to person, body to body. So, for instance, this has been, as the two of you know, Barbara and Theodora, who are here with us also, although you've only been involved in our work for 6 months or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's not very long, but I think you're both well aware that we are, Linda and I as teachers, are inclined to empower others, mm-hmm, rather than to kind of stand on ceremony requiring ourselves to be treated in such and such a way. Well, when we began to consider offering heart gazing, we were just trying to figure out the logistics. I mean, what if there were, 20 or 40 or 80 people in the room? How are we going to wind up doing that? And I said, what do you think? Do you think we should have them, actually like come up in front of us? And there are some teachers who do that kind of thing. Amaji and Mother Mira are very famous. They're huge gatherings and people come up one at a time and They get personal attention, but you got to stand in line and do the whole thing. And Linda was great. And I completely agreed with her. She says, no way. We're going to go to them.
I said, absolutely not. I'm not going to be in the guru seat. You know,
not in that sense.
Not in that sense.
Not in that sense. Not in the sense of... And that was when I started my work back in 1990. When were you born? What date?
February 16th.
93. Okay. So I had gone through my spiritual awakening a few months before you were born, and I actually started my work with people a few months later. So in that sense, there's a part of me that's the same age. When I started my work, I made a big point. I had come out of traditions and had observed many teachers, both more conventional religious leaders and spiritual masters and so on, who would be treated with a sense of a kind of a special reverence. And I knew that I didn't even want the architecture of the room to have the unintended effect of making the people coming feel like they're lesser. So I insisted on sitting on the floor. Over the years, every now and again, I stopped doing so. And sometimes most of the people in the room would be sitting in chairs, like Theodora is here. Sometimes for the longest time, I never did otherwise. I only began to change when one of my knees started going out. Because, like Linda was saying, it's a matter of principle with us not to have our way of working with people and being with people give any impression that we are fundamentally superior. There's a functional superiority. There's something we bring to the occasion that we're in effect being hired to offer. It's a service that we can provide that, you know, on some level, it's another version of being a dry cleaner or a doctor or a lawyer. You know, and you go to get that because you don't have that, you don't do that. But it's not a fundamental superiority. And that's then another of the big shifts that's underway. So, where are we here? As we go through these several conversations over the next few weeks, we'll get into more of the specific details. But basically, I'm going to see if I can really state it essentially, in kind of a very plain way. Heart gazing is, I mean, part of it is literally a gazing, and we're going to describe how that works in a few minutes and actually do it with you. It's actually making eye contact in a certain kind of way that facilitates this. Get back to that page. Yeah. Facilitates deeper heart connection. But part of what we realized about this is that with heart gazing as a process, we want to emphasize that aspect or the aspects of it that are really simple, in some ways physical, energetic, that don't require a lot of thinking, don't need to have complex spiritual philosophies. I mean, as I was telling you two are, Barbara and Theodora were on retreat with us just the other weekend. I think I mentioned at one point that there's actually a very complex understanding of all of what has made this otherwise very simple thing possible. But most people don't need to know that and don't need to be burdened with any sense that they should know it. So the essence of it is that we're helping to heal that spirit-matter split in a very simple human heart-to-heart, basically loving kind way, with Linda and me providing a particular intensification that kind of activates things, because that's what our lives have made possible for us to bring to others. But then people also sharing between and among themselves. And those of you who are on retreat had a chance to do that. And it was a very wonderful part of the events that we had. So the part of the significance of heart gazing, and part of why I capitalize that entire word heart, is because it's not just about heart as a kind of emotional openness, an open-heartedness, a loving quality. It's also the deeper meaning of heart as the place where our connection to God or the higher power or the great mystery is the most profound for us. And the place in our being where our spirituality and our material nature are inherently linked and united. And so by having our hearts and our connection to our hearts deepened and strengthened, we then can find that we are able to navigate in the midst of these shifts and changes with a deeper quality of connection, a deeper sense of trust, a kind of a faith that is based in something that's actually underneath whatever belief systems and thoughts we may have about it. So that's the purpose and the intention here, and in the future conversations at the other meetings, we'll go into a little bit more of the details about that, and also we'll talk about there are some practices that we can provide that can help, other than the ones we're doing this evening, that people may be able to put to use to help strengthen the energy or the connection that they get out of heart gazing. But that's a basic presentation for the evening. So did you want to add anything to that? Or?
Well, I think over time, since this is such a new expression, over time we'll discover that the heart gazing activation, so to speak, will show up in different ways for different people in their lives, I believe. Really feel like it's not just about having a subtle place of feeling a little better, you know. It's actually going to radiate out into your life in an ongoing way and radiate to others in your relationships to others. It's actually going to shift dynamics, I feel. You know, even write down concretely, you know, relationships with mother, daughter, relationships with your boss and coworkers, you know. Once that place of self-trust starts to get touched and healed and held, then that trust and that openness and that expression moves in the world in relationship on all levels. And so again, we don't have concrete examples of that actually happening per se with heart gazing. It's definitely happened through the years in our work in Waking Down Mutuality and in the White Hout Way. But this is a different, I don't want to say simplified version, I guess, that can reach more people in a very organic, simple way, where you don't have to understand what is actually making it work as much as just opening up a little bit in your being, opening up your heart, just a little bit of the hope and the possibility of something shifting. Even just that is a shift, and it's important. It starts to build that confidence in your own body, you know, and in your own thinking process. There's a thing on the door in the bathroom. I can't even paraphrase it right now because I'm not connecting with it too much. Something about happiness isn't the things you have or who you are.
It's what you think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. True happiness. They didn't use true. But, you know, there's, I agree with part of that. And I also want to add, yes, it's what you think, but it's also about just the mystery of being in life and being able to hold the concrete thing of, okay, if I change my thinking, I change my reality. So many teachings talk about that. It's more mysterious than just that. It's not as black and white as all of that. So this is what we're bringing in with the vibration of heart gazing, a kind of a different take on the work that we've already been doing for many years with people. And the fundamental place of it is just that. You know, look at how beautiful you are. Oh my God. I mean, I haven't even started gazing with you technically, and you break my heart open. And that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that, you know, just feeling the beauty of another being and saying, wow, yeah, so welcome you.
It's a landing here together, that heart gazing is about.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll drop us out of being so vulnerable to being knocked around by these shifts, meta shifts that have been happening.
You know, it occurred to me while you were both talking that part of the profound experience of the heart gazing is it just cuts through all that stuff.
Yeah.
You don't have to understand it. You don't have to have any context for it. It just,
yeah.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. It's like a heart laser.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Right.
Yeah.
And it can penetrate.
Mm-hmm.
I love that word nutrient. It's feeding the whole system.
Yeah.
Every part of who you are, you know, it's you get fed.
Mm-hmm.
It's juicy. So yeah, that's the piece I just wanted to bring a bit. Some of our meetings, these first four meetings that we're doing, it's thematic, you know, Samuel will be doing presentations in each one. But we also see in the future of very simplified, very quiet time of heart gazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about cognizing a presentation or trying to understand what certain things mean.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really being together with each other. A little bit of words here and there, a little intro, and then bam, just going right for it. You know, so. Yeah. Bam.
Any other questions or things you want to say?
While you were speaking, I started to get that my life is a lot different than it was. A couple of nights ago, I lost my wallet and didn't realize it till quite a bit later.
Wow.
And remembered exactly where I had been, but thought I had taken it to a friend's house. Didn't even try it. I lost my wallet. Then called the friend to look. Wasn't there, and I'd been in a restaurant, and the restaurant had saved it, put it in a safe place.
Oh, that's good. Mm.
And it's like it was just not one second of being worried about it or all my charge cards or anything.
Yeah.
It was just move, go where you have to go.
Right.
And it was just really delicious to just move through it without. You say juicy and I don't get it, but I just use the similar words. So it's just, you know, and then I was at a birthday party a couple nights ago and a 30-something-year-old young man who I have known for years, I sat with him and he went and told his mother, what a nice lady I am. All I did was listen to him mostly, you know. And so it's like, you know, he's known me for years. He never said a nice thing to me, and he's a bit held in. And so I would not have seen that difference in his perception.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's just, you know, just quiet, but
yes,
a lot more fun than getting completely freaked out that you've lost your wallet, which I could have done, have done. It was just like that, just some sort of a quietness through the movements of what might be perceived as hard or bad or whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's really good.
Thank you. Oh, no. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Glad to be of service. You know, you talked about what you said, what you did with that young man. And you were saying, basically, all I did was listen. But you are listening from a much deeper place in yourself. You're listening from more of your whole being, not just from the ears, not just making sense of what the words mean or what the communication is coming out verbally. It's a deeper kind of listening, and that's what he picked up on.
And a feeling of love towards him also. Yeah. I can remember that that's what I was feeling.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, you radiated that. That was your transmission to him. Beautiful, Theodora.
And it was nice that I got the feedback, because I had no idea anything was happening differently.
It's really important to get that feedback.
Because I'd have had no idea. No way I knew it.
Thank you. Well, anything else? Any other questions or comments or anything?
I was just thinking, when you were giving your meta points, Samuel, that how polarized the world has become, and as the tension builds with all this stuff. You know, I'm thinking of the Catholic Church as an example of just, you know, this ancient, traditional, ritualistic faith that so many people have, and these priests getting arrested and. But it's just like that. And it seems like the same thing's happening in Islam and in fundamental, just all the religions and all the beliefs. It's like, and part of it, I wonder if part of that is just people trying to cling to something. In the face of all this change, something that's familiar, something that feels known, but really doesn't suffice.
Right,
certainly nothing to hold on to.
Yeah, or at the very least, there may be, as I was saying, there may be many elements that they find really work for them and nurture them, but then other aspects that stop them in their tracks, and they have to say, "Well, I don't buy that part of it." And there are some of the really wonderful Oriental meditation teachers who preach this beautiful harmony and compassion, but then, you know, someone will ask them about homosexuality and they'll say, no, it's a sin. Period. You know, end of conversation. They have blinders on. They can't see or feel past the religious dictates on that.
And so, politically, look at what's happening. I mean, in the Democratic Party, there's polarization between the two candidates, which is really turning people off. I mean, there's so much tension in that that it's you know, as Samuel was saying, I mean, hey, this is kind of urgent, folks. And that's just one aspect, along with all the religious stuff and the things that's happening in the banking systems and countries, you know, having difficulty, and then the wars and the genocide. I mean, on and on and on and on. So now is the time. And each body individually makes a difference. Whether you think you're making a difference or not by taking an action to protest or whatever, if you are doing your work and becoming that son, you know, that human son, as Samuel writes, internally, and you're radiating that to the world as best you can, again, how can that not help? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And it's not an actual action, but then you can take action. You know, when you get more confident in those places, then there's more of you present to say, you know, there is something I can actually do maybe to help this organization, or, you know, my friend's crashing and burning and needs some holding and a strong hug, you know, or something, you know, that helps. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fundamentally, vibrationally, that helps. Mm-hmm. It helps balance. But we need a lot of that. Yeah. That's another reason why we're offering heart gazing. We need everybody out there, you know, as best you can, doing whatever it is that you do, whatever moves you naturally, whatever moves your heart to express or to radiate. You know, we need that. It's really important.
Well, shall we do some heart gazing then? Mm-hmm. Let's do that. So,
how long should we sit? We should probably end early tonight.
Yeah, yeah. And there's just a few of us, so we can
then
have
can
a session
party
together.
Mom says, "I don't think
well,
so."
Well, we went to the library today. We both got really good books.
Oh, there you go. Yeehaw! Like it.
Yeah.
Okay, so why don't we introduce the gazing process and the different things that we'll do, and we'll all just be a group together and do this together.
Great.
So you want to introduce the gazing process?
Yeah, well, you obviously have experienced this before, Jenner. You haven't, and this is good to introduce it in a concrete way, so to speak. I think you're getting a feel for what we were talking about, heart gazing. But generally, in the meditations we do, other than heart gazing, we generally let people know that when we do the gazing, we invite people through the meditation to just sit and quietly meditate in whatever form or fashion that supports them the best, you know. And sometimes it's just sitting quietly and just breathing, you know. There's lots of different kinds of ways to just go inside and feel, you know, land a little bit more. During that time of meditation, what we do is we connect visually with each individual who chooses to do so. It's not mandatory that you have to gaze with us, but heart gazing, you know, that's a big piece of that transmission, of that transformative energy that happens as you connect. We are, as I had mentioned before, radiating a certain kind of, what I guess you could call it, like a confidence or a realization of being that we've been living for years now. And that's why we teach the way that we teach. This is what we do with people. And that can be a very activating kind of sensation sometimes. Sometimes people are very sensitive to the transmission. Sometimes they're not, and that's okay. There's no way you should be feeling something or not feeling something. We're not trying to manipulate your energies or read your mind or do any kind of control thing. Oh, heavens, no. Far from that. Really, it is just a mutual connection, heart to heart, being to being, holding the space so that we can connect visually for a few seconds, a minute maybe, depending on how long we just feel. And in the heart gazing, one of the things that we've entered into, which is a little different from just the gazing, is we do sit directly in front of the individual. We sometimes might do a very gentle touch on the knees or the palms of the hands. Sometimes Samuel actually, you know, touch very lightly on the heart center.
Just up to like top of the chest.
Yeah, the top of the chest. He'll play his flute maybe a little bit. I might do a little toning. There's lots of different ways that we can have expression, but it's really a way to as I was saying, to bring that juice of life and confidence and presence in your own body to life. You know, feel it and radiate it and go out and spread it around. So that's what we do. And then we also, through these meetings, will introduce mutual gazing, where you'll gaze with other people too for a short period of time, with the intention or the holding of just being with each other, really. Again, it's not, okay, am I supposed to be getting something from that person? Am I supposed to be the perfect meditator? It's nothing like that. It's just really being yourself and relaxing into opening up to whatever happens, if anything happens. You know? So that's pretty much it. We won't sit very long tonight in the heart gazing. And then afterwards, we're going to do mutual gazing. Is that how we're going to do it, or should we do that first?
Oh, wow. Decisions, decisions.
Yeah.
Since there's just this little small group of us, why don't we do the heart gazing thing first, and each of you can kind of hold the space, just be here and mm-hmm. be aware of what's happening and intend for the best mm-hmm. Openings to occur and so forth. And then after we've done that, we'll have a period where everybody will gaze with each other a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So let's do it that way.